Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, is universal pre-K the best way to spend money from a tax hike? Mayoral candidate Joe Loda takes your calls. What we learn about gender identity from Bradley, now Chelsea, Manning, and a call in for dual citizens now that Senator Ted Cruz has renounced his Canadianness to run for president. But first, three things to do while the chemical weapons inspectors are in your country. One, deny them access to most of the alleged attack sites. Two, launch your biggest chemical weapons assault in front of their noses. And three, have a good laugh with Putin as the world does nothing about it. Though details remain murky, that may well have been the checklist for the Assad regime in Syria since inspectors arrived in Damascus this week. Let's look more closely at the situation and the military response the United States is now considering with Washington Post national security correspondent Karen DeYoung. Karen, thanks for coming on, even as the diplomacy is in high gear around you today. Welcome back to WNYC.
My pleasure, Brian.
So the world, as you know, is being galvanized by these horrific videos that people can see online, apparently of new chemical weapons victims in a Damascus suburb. How much is known for sure about what actually happened?
Well, I think at this point, very little. Experts from all over the world on chemical weapons have been weighing in, most of them saying it's very clear that something happened, but with a lot of disagreement over what exactly that was. Most believe that the pictures and the symptoms exhibited by the videos and the pictures that have been distributed by the opposition indicate there was some kind of toxic event. A lot of people think it was sarin gas, which the Syrians have a lot of. Others say, no, we're not quite so sure. So the push is on now to get some kind of evidence that will prove that.
I'm looking at the latest AP dispatch from Syria, really via Beirut, but about Syria, that came out just less than a half hour ago. And it says, Syrian troops and opposition fighters clashed today during fierce battles in the suburbs of the Syrian capital, where the opposition claims a chemical weapons attack this week killed more than 130 people, activists said. So framing it in terms of ongoing fierce battles, is that the right way to look at what may have happened in the Damascus suburbs this week?
Well, I think the import of what's happening now is that you have a group of UN weapons inspectors who arrived in Damascus on Sunday to look at previous alleged attacks. The call is now from the United Nations, the United States, Britain, France, and many others to let that group go to this place, which is only about a 15-minute drive from where they actually are in Damascus, and make a judgment about what happened before everybody decides what to do about it. Russians, interestingly enough, who are supporters of President Assad, said this morning that they thought that they had urged the Syrian government to allow this to happen. But at the same time, they blamed the opposition for not allowing the inspectors to go in, not providing the right security situations. The UN has tended to say it's the government that needs to give us permission and guarantee our security. So that has become the sort of political issue at the moment. Who's responsible for the ongoing fighting there that everybody says is preventing the inspectors from going to that area?
If this number, 130 people, is accurate, killed by a chemical weapons attack, how would that compare to the previous incidents that the inspectors are there to investigate now? Because I think those were described as small and not the kind of thing that gets chemical weapons on the list of weapons of mass destruction.
Well, I think any use of chemical weapons gets you on the list of using them. But the death tolls, alleged death tolls in those instances were in the low dozens, if that. This would be an incident of far greater magnitude. I think 136 is the lowest estimate of the dead. Some groups have said it's perhaps in the thousands. The Russians, again, have accused the opposition of essentially setting this up. They just issued a statement this morning saying that they believe that that this was an opposition operation designed to frame the government. And they say that some of the videos that were put up actually came up out before the attack actually took place. So this is part of the back and forth that I think makes today a really interesting day to see if there's some kind of consensus that can be reached to get the inspectors actually there to figure out what happened.
Can we discount that claim that rebels might have done it? I mean, they don't call it the fog of war for nothing.
I think it seems kind of far-fetched. And to no one's knowledge, do the rebels actually possess chemical weapons, which the Syrian government has in abundance? But again, there's just no way of knowing. And this is why the United States, while expressing great outrage at what these videos and pictures that have been all across the internet purport to show, has been pretty reticent in its public statements about what it is needs to be done about it.
Listeners, what do you think should be done about this alleged use of chemical weapons in the worst incident yet on the part of the Syrian government if this turns out to get confirmed? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for Washington Post national security correspondent Karen DeYoung. And Karen, your article on the Washington Post site right now cites furious denunciation from many quarters and some very strong language. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is sending his top disarmament official to Damascus. And your headline is U.S. and allies push for immediate probe in Syria chemical attack allegations. You've been describing that. The strongest language in your article comes from the French foreign minister, who said there will be a reaction with force from the international community. That's a quote, a reaction with force from the international community. So when he says force, is he calling for sending more weapons to Syrian rebels or actual military intervention?
Well, that's hard to tell. And, you know, the French have frequently, at least rhetorically, been way out front on issues like this. I think that more interestingly is what President Obama said this morning on a CNN interview, where he was, again, while being very sharp in his denunciation of what might have happened, was pretty cautious in describing what the United States would be ready to do.
You go on, here's a short clip from that. This is 10 seconds of the president on CNN today.
We've called on the Syrian government to allow an investigation of the site because UN inspectors are on the ground right now. We don't expect cooperation given their past history.
So there again, the call is for allowing the inspectors to look at the site.
Right, right. Well, and then he went on to say, on the side of doing something, he says that the United States has core interests in the region, non-proliferation, protecting our allies, which is primarily Israel, the many U.S. military bases. He says he's aware that he had drawn a red line against chemical use last year, and that means that whatever response is coming would likely be fairly soon. But he also says there are rules of international law. If the U.S. goes in and attacks another country without a U.N. mandate and without clear evidence, there are questions in terms of whether international law supports it. Do we have a coalition to make it work? And he says those are the kinds of considerations that we have to take into account. Now, he did meet with his senior national security team yesterday to go over the various options that are on the table, which have been there for more than a year now, that range from further arming the Syrian opposition, which has been a sort of troublesome dilemma for the administration, all the way through using U.S. air power to attack Syrian air assets to what some, particularly in the U.S. Congress, have demanded be a no-fly zone established over Syria. But again, the administration has said things like a no-fly zone doesn't really address the basic question, because most of the people who are getting killed in Syria are not being killed from the air, and certainly those that are allegedly under attack by chemical weapons are not getting attacked by the Syrian Air Force.
Right. So I wonder if this incident is upping the ante on the kinds of military action that the U.S. is considering, because in the past, even those calling for arming the rebels, John McCain and others have said they are not calling and would not call for direct U.S. military intervention. However, I'm looking at the New York—
Well, on the ground, with troops on the ground.
And that's a distinction, because
yes.
I'm looking at the New York Times article that's on their site right now, and it says senior officials from the Pentagon, the State Department, and the intelligence agencies met for 3.5 hours at the White House yesterday to deliberate over options, which officials say, and this is the part that, you know, made my eyes bug out a little bit, which officials say could range from a cruise missile strike to a more sustained air campaign against Syria. If that's the range, if it starts at a cruise missile strike, then they're considering something quite serious.
Right. But those are the same options that have been on the table throughout that the administration has rejected, both because it says it does not have the international legal mandate that President Obama was talking about. The UN has not approved resolutions that would authorize this. And because many in the Pentagon, at least, have argued that it really wouldn't work to substantially alter the situation and achieve U.S. goals of installing a stable, moderate government.
Well, because they don't have the right target to strike with a cruise missile? There isn't sort of a chemical weapons depot or something like that?
Chemical weapons are dispersed in many places around the country. And what they don't know is, again, they think they know where most of them are. They're not sure where all of them are. Bombing these places, they don't know whether they would actually release toxins by bombing them. Their strategy up to now has been to try to appeal to keep a close watch on these places and to appeal to the specialized troops that are actually guarding them to say, you know, you guys need to look at the long term here. This is not a winning situation for you, and you're going to be blamed if these chemicals get out.
So, listeners, what do you think the United States or the United Nations should do in Syria, given the details we've just been hearing from Karen DeYoung, national security correspondent for The Washington Post? 212-433-WNYC. We'll start taking your calls as soon as we come back from this break. 212-433-9692. And we'll also get into whether this civil war and the developments in it in Syria have anything to do with the possible budding civil war that we've been obsessing on in Egypt. So stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we talk about what to do in Syria with the videos that are circulating of what appear to be horrific chemical weapons attacks, President Obama and others calling on the Syrian government to allow weapons inspectors who are already in the country investigating previous incidents to get a look at this area of the Damascus suburbs where these incidents are alleged to have taken place. So does this change the dynamic for you if you have opposed intervention in the Syria civil war before? Or what do you think about any of this, especially with respect to what the United States should do? Our lines are full at 212-433-WNYC. So let's start with Leah in Greenwich. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Look,
what do you think?
I think we cannot parent the whole world and we cannot police the whole world. Sometimes you just got to let go. Let them do what they want to each other. I mean, there's a limit to how many of our guys should be killed because those people can't get it together.
Is there any responsibility, in your opinion, on the part of, let's say, the broader international community, often led by the United States, when there's a real human rights atrocity that takes place somewhere in the world?
I think we should let the United Nations take care of it. That's what the United Nations is for. And if they can't get it together, we cannot be the parents of the entire world.
Leah, thank you very much. And Karen DeYoung, Washington Post national security correspondent. That's an interesting distinction between the United States and the United Nations. Do you think it applies?
Oh, very definitely. And it's something that the Obama administration is very, very much aware of. They have their own polls, and they see public opinion polls that show that despite some very vocal members of Congress demanding that the United States take action, that huge portions of the American public are tired of these interventions and they don't want it to happen. And actually, President Obama made a reference to this in his comments with CNN this morning. He said, we're still spending billions in Afghanistan. I go to Walter Reed and visit wounded troops. And every time that happens, he said, I'm reminded that there are costs and we have to take those into account as we try to work within an international framework to do everything we can to see Assad ousted. So I think that they're very conscious that a unilateral U.S. action is not going to be very popular here.
Waji on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Waji. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Brian, for taking my call. Yeah, I'm an Arab American from Long Island. Two things. I heard yesterday on the news that the administration cannot confirm that there was a chemical attack in the first place because we don't have, quote-unquote, relations with Syria. And I remember with Iraq, we were able to confirm everything. We did not have relations with Saddam. We bombed Iraq. We ruined it. And now we cannot confirm.
And given if your view on Iraq is we bombed Iraq, we ruined it, do you want the United States to bomb Syria?
Well, that's the second part. The second part is this is now a humanitarian issue. As per the statistics, and CNN confirms that 80,000 to 100,000 people have been killed in Syria, whether by chemical weapons or not, and yet the U.S. is not interfering. I mean, I'm against, of course, the U.S. intervention because there's always an agenda somewhere. There's always the Israel wars. But now that 100,000 people being killed, and the war's still on, now Syria is open for everybody to fight and kill and get killed. I mean, I don't know. I'm just a question to the lady with you. What can we do to stop the human massacres?
Waji, thank you. Karen DeYoung, if only there was an easy answer to the question, what can we do to stop the human massacres?
Well, I think the caller raises a very interesting comparison with Iraq, which it must be said was under a different administration, where you had UN inspectors in there who basically could not confirm the presence of weapons of mass destruction. And as he said, we bombed anyway. Here, we're trying to ascertain the use and then decide what to do about it. So it is a very interesting juxtaposition. But, you know, I think the administration does not want a unilateral U.S. policy. They've tried very hard to get the United Nations to become involved in this. Russia has vetoed several resolutions saying that that this is interference in an internal matter, that the world community should not go about ousting world leaders. And so that's where we are. And as these numbers go up and as there are indications of the use of weapons of mass destruction, the question then becomes, as we've been discussing, does that change everybody's calculus?
Yoreem in Riverdale. You're on WNYC. Hi, Yoreem.
Hi. Hello. This is Yoreem from Riverdale in the Bronx.
Yoreem, I'm sorry I mispronounced your name.
That's
go ahead.
Okay. I love your show on all, you know, on all levels. I would like to say this, and I limit myself only to the Arab world, not to the Muslim world. And my observation is that the Arab world will fight to the last American to remain in power. Whoever's in power will fight at the cost of the American soldier, and we've lost enough. Any call for international intervention, as called by any side in the Syrian conflict, really what they're talking about is they want American intervention. And what we found out is that our country has lost trillions of dollars in treasure and thousands of deaths of our soldiers, destroying thousands of families in the process who are grieving for the rest of their lives, merely to save, not merely, but to save Muslims in Bosnia-Herzegovina, in Lebanon, and Iraq. And as a consequence, this country, our country, we can't even afford infrastructure in educating our children because of the efforts and the treasure we've lost to save other people from their inhumanity to each other.
But why do you limit that limit to the Arab world? Are you saying the United States should not?
Because there are Muslims who are wonderful. Because there are Muslims who live with each other in Indonesia and in other parts of the world. Muslims are good people, per se. They are good people.
But
they're
the
Arab-on-Arab
conflicts are just too intractable?
Yes, that's exactly the point.
I'm going to leave it there and get a response. That may be too broad a brush, Karen.
Well, that, as I said, is a point of view that the Obama administration is very much aware of. I guess those who counter it would say that, allowing these situations to go their own path conceivably undermine larger U.S. strategic interests. If you have Arab countries divided into perpetual sectarian warfare, largely between Sunnis and Shiites, does that undermine U.S. energy interests, U.S. Nonproliferation interests, U.S. commitment to Israel? And does it allow terrorism to proliferate in areas that ultimately will redound on this country? So those are the kinds of things that make these such difficult questions.
And there are different situations in different countries. Certainly some do have these intractable civil wars and sectarian wars that maybe the U.S. would be wasting American blood on. Then you have situations like Kuwait, which was certainly extremely grateful to the United States for stopping the U.S. invasion, the Iraqi invasion, I should say, back in the 90s. So different countries are different. But Rule in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Good speaking with you. I've listened to you for years.
Thank you.
I thought it was kind of interesting that the Assad government would basically attack its own citizens 2 to 3 days before having UN inspectors show up. I just think that was kind of a weird move for a government to do that.
In fact, 2 to 3 days after the weapons inspector showed up, they arrived on Monday, as we actually talked about a little bit on the show on Monday. So, Karen, it certainly is strange timing. Do you think it's a coincidence because the battle in the Damascus suburb had just progressed to that point? Or do you think this really could have been an in-your-face dissing of the inspectors by Assad?
Well, that is one of the many questions about this. I mean, a lot of people, including the Russians, but people who are not necessarily Assad backers, have said, look, this makes no sense at all. Why would they do this just at the time? They went through extensive negotiations with the United Nations in order to get these inspectors there in the first place. So it doesn't make any sense. The Syrian opposition says, this just proves that Assad is in the United States' face, is so certain that nobody's going to do anything about this that he doesn't care anymore.
Karen DeYoung, national security correspondent for The Washington Post, with us for a few more minutes as we talk about the fast-changing events in Syria and diplomatically around those events after this alleged chemical weapons attack this week. Are these new events in Syria relevant or irrelevant to the new events in Egypt? I was wondering if Assad might have even been doing this week because he thinks the international media and diplomacy establishment are so distracted by Egypt. Is that too cynical?
Well, I think it's certainly posed difficulties for the administration here in Washington, and kind of you've got the same people in charge of this area of the world in the State Department, the Pentagon, and the White House, trying to juggle these two very large crises at one time. Over the long term, they're related, I think, in the sense that the post-Arab Spring uprisings are remaking the map of the Middle East in a way that will not necessarily be sympathetic to the United States. And so I think in that way they're related. I don't know that they're directly related on a day-to-day basis.
I see you also reported in the Post on Yemen this week, the reopening of the U.S. embassy there following the terrorist attack scare of the last few weeks. Is that threat now over? And I mean not just the embassy in Yemen, but so many embassies and plain old American travelers were put on alert. Was it a false alarm? Were the plotters killed by drones? Is there an end to this story?
I don't think it was a false alarm, at least as far as the U.S. intelligence community was concerned. They say they did intercept communications about planned attacks on U.S. installations. And it's, I believe it's also fair to say that because of what happened in Benghazi last year with the attack on the U.S. Diplomatic facility and CIA facility there, they decided to err on the side of caution of closing down these installations during the period that their intercepts indicated to them was particularly dangerous. In Yemen, that seemed to have been the core of those intercepts and where there were specific targets that they were able to identify. And so they decided to launch a lot of drone attacks against al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which they now believe have, if not wiped out the threat, at least driven them back into their hiding places for the moment, to the point where it allowed them to, in a small way, not completely, reopen the embassy in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen.
In the clip of Obama on CNN this morning that we played earlier, it ended with him saying, after he called for Damascus to allow the weapons inspectors to look into this incident, he said, "I don't expect cooperation from the Syrian government. We haven't gotten it before." Is there any reason to think that they will get cooperation, at least to let the weapons inspectors look around, or if there's any way to force that cooperation?
Well, I think that I don't know that they can force it on the Syrians. They're looking with great interest at the Russian statements this morning, also with great skepticism, because the Russians have been pretty immovable on this issue. But I think if there's going to be any movement, it's going to be with the Russians making what would be a pretty significant change in policy and saying, yes, we believe that this inspection ought to take place, because I can't believe that they're totally confident in their own allegations that this was an opposition operation. And if it turns out to have been proven by the inspectors that it actually was a government operation, then that's going to pose some very difficult problems for Russia as well as for this country.
Let's get one more caller in. Richard in Highland Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. The United States clearly cannot act unilaterally, and the United Nations will not do anything because the Security Council will be blocked by the Russian vote and probably a Chinese veto also. As I see it, if we're to stop these further massacres, and this must be maybe the eighth or ninth time that poison gas has been used against population in Syria. I mean, this was done also by President Assad's father. The only way to stop this from going on an ongoing basis is for the great powers who believe in intervention to intervene, occupy the country, and divide it along ethnic boundaries, but to create stable, smaller countries that can coexist with each other.
Wow. So there's our most interventionist call for today, Karen, and we have 15 seconds. Anybody in power talking about dividing Syria into countries for the different groups?
I think everybody remembers back about 100 years when these countries were divided by the Western powers in the first place.
Yeah, that didn't work
and
so well.
That didn't seem to work out too well.
Karen DeYoung, National Security Correspondent for The Washington Post, thank you so much for your clarity today. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We have the news at 10:30 coming up. We're taking 10:30 and 11:30 newscasts today rather than the 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock as a format experiment. Then after the news, is universal pre-K the best way to spend money from a tax hike? Mayoral candidate Joe Loda takes your calls. What we learn about gender identity from Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, and a call-in for dual citizens now that Senator Ted Cruz has renounced his Canadianness to run for president. All coming up after the latest news.